ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्यज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवाशति गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। So Govind Prabhu was supposed to speak, but then I guess Miss Putna got killed quite fast. So the next speaker is me, and the topic is simplicity in Krishna consciousness. There was once a man, because of certain bodily problems, he went to a doctor. He explained his symptoms, his problems to the doctor. The doctor prescribed certain medicines for him and told him that the best medicine for you is that every day you must walk 15 miles for a month. So after 1 month, the doctor got a call, and the patient called him up and said, I am 450 miles away from this town. How do I get back? I heard this joke long back, and the next day I went to Hare Krishna temple, and they told me I had certain issues, certain problems. So I asked them, what is the solution? So they told me, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Luckily, I asked them, how much? So they told me 15 rounds. So simplicity in Krishna consciousness, sometimes this term simplicity, or a simple term, simpleton, a person is a simpleton, a simple person. This can be understood either ways. It could either be a blessing, or it could be something that one does not wish that one has in his character, because one can be cheated. But through Krishna's pastimes, as explained in the Bhagavatam, we'll try to understand what is this simplicity, and is it really that essential in Krishna consciousness? You see, when Krishna appeared, he appeared in Mathura. According to Bhagavatam, the one view of understanding is he appeared in Mathura, then he came to Gokul. His father Vasudev carried him across Jamuna. He came to Gokul Dham, Mahavan. And within a couple of days, actually, Krishna was just as a small baby. His mother Yashoda would just place him on bed, and all he could do was just play little arms and legs. He could not even move his body either ways, because his spine was not developed as yet, as a baby. And at that point of time, a witch named as Putana came, and she wanted to breastfeed him poison. Now that's a very difficult proposition, because generally breastfeeding would mean the compassionate nature of a mother. And even a mother who generally under circumstances where she had to take some stringent or unthought of steps to her children would not breastfeed them poison. But still, because Putana approached Krishna as a mother, Krishna decided to purify her. And he sucked milk from her breast and also sucked out her life. And then, within a few months, according to medical science, when the child is 2 to 3 months, this reed, this spine, the spine is sufficiently developed and the child can try to turn itself its body, just lift up its head. So in Vedic society, this particular time in the child's development is called as Uthan. It's a joyous occasion because the child is developing very nicely. So when Krishna was showing the symptoms, they decided to celebrate the Uthan ceremony. And many of the residents of Vrindavan and from close by places also, those who could come, close by villages and towns, were invited. And the festival was held in the palace of Nanda Maharaj, Gokul. For those of us who have been there, it's called as Chaurasi Khamba now. The palace is very beautiful. At least one should think it is beautiful. If you see those pillars, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena, with the eyes of love you can understand they are very beautiful. Charasi Khamba. So there this festival was held, Uthana ceremony, or Krishna raising up his head. He was not known as Krishna then, he was just Nandalal. And in order to take care of a guest, and because this young baby was slightly sleepy, Mother Yashoda put him under a cart. She thought that this is the best place for him to be. Because the cart was covered from all sides, it was well protected, and it was in a quiet place. So she placed him there. But she did not know that one of Kansa's cohorts, one of his agents, had come in the form of a cart. A Shakata Sur. Krishna knew this, obviously because he's also in the heart of Shakata Sur, so he knew this is Shakata Sur is coming in the form of a cart. So Krishna suddenly, he showed that he wanted to stretch his legs. Because right now his spine is just developed, you see. If you see Krishna's pastimes, if you try to properly understand, it seems quite logical. A small child who has just developed his spine wants to move his legs. So Krishna just moved his legs, but he moved them in such a way that the whole cart crashed. And it crashed in such a way that even if it was used as a jigsaw puzzle, nobody could put it together. Ever. Krishna moved his legs in such a way that he wanted to kill Shakatasura. The Shakatasura was destroyed. This happened just within a couple of months. A few months later when Krishna was, he could manage to be on his knees and hands. Mother Yashoda was sitting with him in the courtyard. Suddenly there was a huge whirlwind. And one more demon by the name of Pinavarata, he came. And because of this whirlwind, there was so much of sand and dust, the eyes of all the residents of Vrindavan, either they were covering their eyes to protect it, or it was totally blind, they were totally blinded by the dust and the storm. In that instance, Srinavar, he lifted up Krishna and wanted to take him high up into the sky. This is the first recorded space travel, even before the... Although they say some millionaire has gone into space on one of the Russian spaceships. The fact is, actually Krishna was the first one. And he did not have to pay anything for it. So he went, Krishna was enjoying that ride, but suddenly he found that Trinavarta has different ideas, he had different motives. So Krishna just made himself heavy. More heavy than Trinavarta could tolerate. So slowly, if you know jet propulsion, there is a drag force, and there is a force that takes the jet forward. So the drag force is not overcome, the rocket or the jet will not be propelled into space. So Krishna simply increased the drag force. It became heavy. And all he did was hang around Trinavarta's neck. In such a way that Trinavarta was he had himself put Krishna around his neck, but now he could not remove Krishna's hold. It was a strong hold. And Trinavrata crashed down and he died. Then after a few months, Krishna became a little older. And one day Mother Yashoda thought that Krishna was eating some dirt on the ground. That's old enough. So she asked him, Krishna, open your mouth. You should not eat dirt. And you know, mother, see again, this is how a child develops. When a young child is there and is eating dirt, he is quite determined that he does not want to open his mouth. But then mothers are usually stronger than the children at that age. So they forcibly open their mouth. And that is what Mother Yashoda did. She used both her hands and opened Krishna's mouth. And within the mouth she saw the whole universe. She saw many universes. She saw the whole creation. The universal form. Right within the mouth of Krishna. But then Krishna uses yoga maya potency by which motherly love for Krishna developed much more. And Mother Yashoda started thinking about how Krishna must be feeling unhealthy or little ill because of eating the dirt, and she tried to give him some remedies for that. So this is where Krishna showed the universal form within his mouth. After some time Krishna became big, couple of years old, he could run about here and there. Mother Yashoda would always be wondering, oh, if he runs here, some vessel may drop on him, if he runs there, some monkey may scratch him. So she was always very careful, always on the lookout, where is little Gopal? But on the day of Diwali, she wanted to make some special preparation for Krishna. So she specially fed Krishna in such a way with so much love, and her intention was that Krishna should fall asleep. So understanding her intention, Krishna fell asleep, finding herself free, she put him down in a nice place and went to make some sweetmeats. So Krishna became angry. And his anger, he destroyed all the pots that were there with curd and milk, including the very ingredients which Mother Yashoda was going to make nice preparations for him. And if that was not sufficient, then he went outside and sat on a grinding mortar and started distributing butter to all the monkeys. Jiva Goswami says, because since the last period, when Lord Ramchandra had taken all the monkeys to Lanka, for 4 months he could not feed them nicely, so they were hungry since then. So Krishna said, all right, I'll give you a Govinda's feast today. So Govinda's feast was butter. In Vrindavan, Govinda's feast, Krishna is Govinda. So he offered butter to them. And they were very happy eating the butter. Then Mother Yashoda comes from behind. She's angry. Everything is broken. This Krishna is getting out of hand. Natural, when a mother sees a child growing up and becoming naughty, she wants to correct the child. I guess all of us are your children, isn't it? This is our experience. That is what happened to Krishna. So she came with, she thought that maybe I should just slightly put a slight bit of fear in him. He thinks I and Nanda Baba are both old and we will not be able to do anything. So let me have a stick in my hand. A stick looks quite intimidating. So she took a stick in her hand, a yashti. And she went and showed Krishna. Krishna became so fearful. He started crying and rubbing in his eyes. And all the mascara, all the kajal that was there in his eyes, the blank black ointment, all that was flowing down along with the tears. And seeing this wonderful scene, Mother Yashoda's heart melted and she threw away the stick. But she said, I'll punish him. So she tied him to the grinding mortar. And she left him there. So in that situation, Krishna looked around and said, all right, now what to do? I'm here with this mortar. So he looked at two twin Arjuna trees. Very tall, very powerful and much more older than the sequoia trees in the Americas. The sequoia trees in America are supposed to be 700 years old and no tree is older than them and they are supposed to be very strong. But these twin Arjuna trees were standing there for thousands of years. Can you imagine how strong they were? And Krishna went in between two of these trees in such a way that the grinding mortar just fell down horizontally, got stuck. Krishna was on one side, the grinding mortar was on the other side and the two trees were in between. So Krishna was tied around the waist and all he did was do a waist pull. Any of us ever have played this game where a rope is tied around the waist so Krishna was playing this game with his trees. And with a slight tug, the two trees came crashing down. And amazingly, two demigods came out of those trees. Or at least the sons of demigods. The demigod Kuvera, Nala Kuvera and Manigris. They thanked Krishna, thank you so much for liberating us from this tree-like existence. They offered him prayers and they left. Then everyone came running and they freed Krishna. Everyone pampered Krishna very much. Krishna was not very much pleased with Mother Yashoda. He said, I will never talk with her. Now this was the situation. Because Nanda Baba would always have to go out. He could not stay in the house. So Krishna was, he was a young boy. He had to be fed, he had to be clothed, he had to be taken care of. But Krishna was angry with Mother Yashoda. He wanted to taste that special rasa with Mother Yashoda. Now when a child becomes angry with his mother and the mother sees a child is angry, it increases the affectionate bond between them. Somehow or the other, after lot of cajoling, Krishna agreed, all right, I listen to Mother Yashoda. For some time things were alright, then one day Krishna heard a fruit vendor coming. Please take fruits. So Krishna was still maybe 3 years, 3.5 years old. So he had seen his father doing the barter system. So he came from within his godown where there were grains. He was carrying his grains in his little palms. And children, they cannot coordinate their finger movements as adults do. You see, as adults, we very naturally bring all our fingers together. Right? Especially when we receive nice gifts. But as a child try as much as he can. You see a 3 year, 3.5 year old child. Try as much as he can. His fingers will just depart. And that is what happened when Krishna was carrying all these grains. The fingers wouldn't come together. So whatever remained as he came walking those 10 yards, 15 yards, much of the grains fell from the spaces in between his fingers. Only a few just remained within the palm of his hand. And that he offered to the fruit seller. Now generally the fruit seller would not agree to such a deal. But seeing Krishna's beautiful form, and it is explained that she had spent many days passing in front of Nanda Maharaj's palace with a desire that this young child would come and she may be able to see him. So just by seeing Krishna, she became so overwhelmed with joy. She offered a whole basket of fruits. And Krishna said, all right, you take this. And you know, sometimes when devotees go out for donations, or they just go to visit someone, and somebody says, you know, I want to offer you this, and we say, please take something. And they say, no, please. We just take it. So just like that, this fruit vendor, this lady said, no, it's all right. I don't want anything. But Krishna said, So he put that possibly into her basket after collecting all the fruits from there. Now she was so mesmerized by this whole episode. She was not aware of what was happening. By the end of the episode, when Krishna went in. Now this was a very interesting serial for her. A TV presentation live. By the end of that, she did not know how time had passed. The serial was over, or that episode was over. She just lifted her basket and put it on her head. But as she was trying to lift it and put it on her head, she found it to be very heavy. And within the basket, she found jewels, pearls, and all varieties of precious ornaments. She could not understand anything. And Krishna had already run inside. So, remembering Krishna's beautiful form, she thought that this is something very miraculous and she left. After this incident, it is described that because there were so many disturbances in Vrindavan, the residents of Gokul decided to shift to Nandagram, bypassing after going via Vrindavan. Because Nanda Maharaj had a palace there and somehow or the other, this place was assured that no demons would come there. Long, long ago, somebody had performed such penances, right, that it was assured that no demons would come there. So they shifted to Nandana. So that was not to be, because after some time, Krishna and the other boys with whom he was friends of the same age, they wanted to go out, they wanted to play, they wanted to herd cattle. So they were given charge of the calves, and they would go out into the pasturing grounds. And it was there that many demons would come. There was a demon who came as a calf. This guy was a calf. Krishna told Balaram, this is a special calf. So I'll give it special treatment. Krishna went behind the calf, caught the calf by the leg, and that is how you catch calves actually. You want to catch a calf? You have to catch its legs, especially the hind legs. If you see a calf, the calf can never stay still in one place. And it will always be jumping, and its legs, which are very thin, if you see a calf, it jumps on its legs. Even in one place, it will be jumping like that. But if you tie its legs, it cannot jump. A cow will walk, even if its legs are tied. But a calf, once its legs are caught, it can do nothing. So Krishna simply caught the hind legs of the calf and started cartwheeling it, moving the calf around his head in a circle. And just by his fast motion, the centrifugal force was so great, much more than the centripetal force, that the soul of the calf simply left out of the body, and the calf, that is Vatsasura, died. And then after that, all the boys, they clapped their hands. They said, very nice, Krishna, very nice. The end of another episode in Krishna's life, in his pastimes. And one day, as they were going on the pasturing grounds, suddenly they found a very huge duck with its bill, the lower beak on the ground and the upper beak, way into the sky. And everyone was sure why this duck was there. This was not Disneyland, Vrindavan Land, something like that. they were sure what was the purpose of this duck being here. I mean, by now everyone was sure why this people are coming. Right? It was the daily news, Vrindavan daily news. So then Krishna, he first purposefully went along that path that led straight to the duck's mouth and entered the beak. And as soon as Krishna entered the beak, the duck followed him. This was Bhakatru, this brother of Putana and a friend of Kansa. Or at least Kansa forced him to be a friend. So, yes, friendships are forceful. You know, some countries today, they have this duck. They say, we are friends. But you know why they are friends? It's forced friendship. So Krishna, a duck needs some, it takes some time to swallow something. It's got slightly long neck, a curved neck. But there is another aspect that is very much common to necks. This part of the digestive system, generally in humans it is called esophagus, technical term for it. Just like Prabhupada says, activities of the living entities in the constitutional position is technically called devotional service. This is Bhagavad Gita. Technical term, esophagus. And those who know something about medicine, there is a reflux in the esophagus, that is called an esophageal reflux. Once that is activated, things pop out. One vomits out something. So Krishna simply made himself so hot that this Bakasura, this demon in the form of a duck, could not swallow him. So the reflux was instigated and Krishna was thrown out. As soon as Krishna was thrown out, he stood on the lower beak of the duck and the upper beak he simply stretched it in such a way that the duck was bifurcated. And that was the end of Bakasura. Then came the time when Krishna became a little older, around 5 years of age. And this time Balaram ji stayed at home because it was his birthday. So all the coward boys and Krishna went into the pasturing grounds and a demon in the form of a big snake came. It was Agasur, a big python. He swallowed all the boys first. And as I said, by now the boys were used to all these things happening. So they were never afraid. They said, all right, even though it is not Disneyland, let us make a Disneyland. Let us have some nice enjoyment. So they walked straight in the mouth of Agassiz, thinking that whatever will happen, Krishna will take care. Right, like Shaman Prabhu in the lecture mentioned, Arjuna simply slept. Krishna, now it is your business to see how, you know, Jayadrath will be killed. So similarly, the coward boys, although they did not need to hear the message of the Gita, but they were assured that Krishna would protect them. So then everyone walked in, then finally Krishna walked in, and he increased his size in such a way that Agassiz choked up. Now snakes don't have a neck. So once something is swallowed, it is very difficult for them to again vomit out. So in the case of Agassiz, the only option for Agassiz was that he choked to death. You see, therefore a python, when it swallows anything, he has to go around a tree so that he does not choke to death. The only way that it has to digest is he breaks up the bones of that person and his juices will digest up that deer or whatever he has eaten. So Krishna increased his size much more larger than a deer. And Agassiz, and obviously Krishna was so heavy, he could not move. So he had to choke to death. And his life there, his soul came out through the top of his head. That was the only space left for the soul to come out. It burst through the top of his skull. And then when Krishna came out, the soul accepted shelter within the body of Krishna. And that was the end of Agassiz. Now this pastime reached the ears of this incident. It was no longer any daily news, Vrindavan news, local news. It became universal news. Even Brahmaji's Loka, in his, all the newspapers are typing this. This was the incident that was very amazing. So Brahmaji came to know. He said, is this small boy really capable of doing this? So he came down. He stole all the cowherd boys and their calves, put them in a place where he thought he could keep them safe. But then, you know, no place is safe, especially in today's times, you know, anything can be hacked. So Krishna, he is the source of all knowledge. He knows where they are. He knows all the passwords to that. But Krishna, he did not do anything. He simply expanded himself to as many cowherd boys and as many calves for one full year. And then Brahmaji came down after a year. When he saw this, he was amazed. And then Krishna showed that how each of his cowherd boys and calves are actually his own self. He manifested from each of his calves, he manifested his form of Vishnu, 400 form of Lord Narayan. Brahmaji offered his prayers. And then Krishna said, all right, now you can go. Brahma offered him. After that, one day Krishna and Balaram were roaming around their fields. Our boy said, you are hungry. There is a nice garden nearby. It is full of nice tall fruits. But there is a demon by the name of Dhenukasura. Now this is one of my very humorous pastimes. I like this very much. Because this is the first pastime that Balaramji kills someone. And you know my name is Rohini Priya Das. Anyways, so why it is humorous is because when they entered the forest and Balaramji started shaking all the trees and all the tall fruits started falling, Dhenukasura became very angry and he wanted to not just chastise and punish, he actually came with the intent of killing anyone who was intruding into his garden. So then he saw Balaram standing there. Now Balaram standing beside a tall tree with all fruits around him. And you know what Dhenukasura did? He actually sprinted towards him. And I'll tell you why this is humorous. Because a donkey when he sprints, it's okay. He reaches wherever he wants to reach, he reaches. But after that, a donkey, he cannot do anything. If he wants to hurt that person, he has to turn around. Can you imagine this scene? This Dhenukasura running at full speed towards Balaram, then he stops, turns around. This is so wonderful. And then he kicks him. Why run so much? So much of momentum. Can you imagine all the cowherd boys seeing this? Running, 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 running. Shh, stop. Turn around. and kick him with his hind legs. And not just one demon, because this Balaji, he just cartwheeled him and threw him into the trees. So many other asses in the demons in the form of asses came. I mean, this demon really liked to be asses. They came and each one of them would do the same thing, would run, stop, turn around. If somebody could make a serial on this, it would be so humorous. This whole scenario. Anyways, that was the end of Dhenukasura, the ass demon. Then came the episode where Krishna and Balaram, actually again Balaram is stayed back, Krishna and the cowboys along the banks of the Jamuna. And Kaliya, he influenced everyone in such a way that they appeared to be almost lifeless, all the cowherd boys and all the calves on the banks of the Jamuna. And then Krishna chastised Kaliya by dancing on his hoods. 101 hoods Kaliya had, and any hood that would rise up to try to strike Krishna, Krishna would jump on that hood and dance on it in such a way that Kaliya would feel as if his head is breaking. But it was a most wonderful dance. Nataraj, Shri Krishna. After that, there were some demons in between. There was Arishtasur, then Brahmasur, then finally Keshi came. Oh, Keshi, huge horse. And specifically in this purport, Prabhupada writes how a horse can be tamed. Krishna knew the art. So this horse came running and he wanted to catch Krishna, maybe crush him in his mouth, whatever, maybe crush him under his feet. Keshi was not yet decided what to do. He was simply, it is described, he was so angry because by now Krishna had a record. Kansa's court was almost empty. Udana, Shakata, Trina, all were gone. Keshi was one of the last few remaining, so he was angry because he had lost many friends. And he wanted to take revenge. And he was like the last hope for Kansa Maharaj. So in a very angry mood, he just came running and shaking the ground of Vrindavan and crashing into trees and hearing names so loudly, calling out so loudly that people are frightened simply hearing his voice. And then he saw Krishna standing with a cowherd boyfriend with one hand on his shoulder and twirling in his other hand a flower as if he did not care whether goes this Keshi, horse, demon. So he came running towards Krishna and Krishna just lifted his hand off the shoulder of his friend, put it into his mouth and increased the temperature. Just that much. As if Krishna had some resistor here. That is how Krishna introduces all the laws within this material world. Laws of heat, laws of... Everything is there. Krishna aham sarvasya prabhavo. Krishna is source of everything. So put his hand inside. And Prabhupada says, that is how horse is tamed. Once you put your hand inside his mouth, horse can do nothing. And increase the temperature. And because the horse could do nothing, the horse burned to death. Keshi demon, Keshi demon burned to death. After that, Kansa Maharaj did not want to take any chances. He said, better call him in our own territory, apni ilake mein. Once he comes here, it will be our surrounding, my environment, I can control everything, and here I'll be able to subdue him, capture him, and ultimately kill him. So he invited him to Mathura. On the pretext of paying taxes and attending a festival, the bow festival, the sacrificial bow festival. So Krishna came. And then, there were many episodes that took place, but one incident that especially took place in Mathura was, Kamsa had an elephant by the name of Kuvalya Peed. This elephant was really demoniac, very, very powerful. So he came charging towards Krishna with the intent of crushing him under his foot. In the beginning, Krishna confused him by running in between his legs. So that, and elephants, although they have, you know, huge heads, their intelligence is not so, they have strong memory power. The intelligence is not so powerful, especially when they have to coordinate their bodily functions. It's very difficult. The elephant once slips down, it takes years for him to get up again. Krishna knew that. He knew that somehow they confuse him in such a way that he will not be able to coordinate his bodily functions and the elephant falls down. Once it falls down, then what can he do? So he ran in between his legs in such a way, crisscrossing in between his legs, that Kuvalya Peed was totally confused. And he fell down, tripping over his own legs. And do you know what Krishna and Balaram did then? They simply walked up to him, his face, picked out his tusks, and started ramming him with those tusks. His own very tusks, they started beating him to death. So these are some of the pastimes in short that I've explained, and many other pastimes that I've explained in the Bhagavatam. The point that I want to bring out is, in Vrindavan, and specifically even if Krishna comes out of Vrindavan to Mathura for some time, just in the condition of Vrindavan, whenever Krishna has to do something, he has to do some activity, he always uses products that are available locally. And this is Vrindavan, very simple village. People there are simple. Simplicity is the essence of Vrindavan. And that is why Krishna could have employed only once during the Govardhan Leela, the Sudarshan Chakra came. Or maybe another time. Otherwise, never, none of his weapons, nothing. And that preserved the mood of Vrindavan, its simplicity. Because everyone thought, our child Krishna, how can he bring down the trees simply by his waist? Just by using the whatever attributes Krishna had, his body, his strength, his hands, increasing his body temperature. So simplicity in Krishna consciousness is essential, because Krishna in Vrindavan is a very simple person. He's very simple. He's a simple cowherd boy who likes to tend his cows, his calves, play with his cowherd boys, likes to have nice pastimes with his mother and father. And if some demons come, kill them in a simple way. No industries, no missiles, no tanks, nothing. Whatever is available locally. And it is not just killing aspect. Even when the cowherd boys and Krishna, Balaramji would go into the pasturing grounds, they would be decorated very nicely by their mothers. They would have nice kajal, they would have nice locally made powder. Whatever they had in the... But then they would enter into the forest, Govardhan Hill, other hills, they would take the minerals available locally and color themselves. They would take the flowers available locally and decorate themselves. They would take the creepers available locally and garland themselves. In fact, they would take the leaves of trees and eat their food out of the bunch boxes from them. And sometimes, they would manifest bhojan sthalis, food plates, cups and plates in the rocks of Vrindavan or of Brajamandal. So this is simplicity. Simplicity means using what is available, what has been given to us by Krishna, use it totally to serve Krishna, to please Krishna. Aspiring to collect things externally, artificially, simply complicates matters. Some of the definitions of simplicity, there are three. At least others can be found, but I would like to put forward three today. These are based on Srila Prabhupada's books. His Divine Grace, Abhay Charana and Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's books. First of all, Srila Prabhupada, he describes simplicity as he described, because we've described the pastimes in Vrindavan. He says simplicity means leading a simple life, a life based on whatever is your necessity, only try to achieve that. That is simplicity. Just try to lead a very simple life. The second definition of simplicity gives us, simplicity means straightforwardness and honesty. And another place, he quotes Sridhar Swami and says, simplicity means equanimity of the mind. So we'll try to discuss in short, analyze in short these three definitions, specifically simple life and straightforwardness. So what is straightforwardness or honesty? So Prabhupada says, simplicity as straightforwardness or honesty means one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the truth even to an enemy. And Prabhupada quotes this and says that this is the culture of India, or India's simplicity.
Gopal Mallakya says, India was always like that. There were so many foreigners who took advantage of India's simplicity. They came. India's magnanimity was that they welcomed anyone who would come, properly welcomed them as guests, treated them as so. And these people came and took. They took benefit of this simplicity, this magnanimity of India's culture. They looted India. But still, India never gave up its culture. Because the Indian culture is, whoever comes to our house is a guest, treat him in such a way that even if he's an enemy, he forgets that he's an enemy and forgets why he came to your house. Treat them in such a way. And in another lecture, in many other lectures, Prabhupada mentioned, only when this culture was lost, did India become poverty stricken. So many times India has, there so many innovators have come. But this culture was preserved, this culture of simplicity. What is that? Even if an enemy comes, treat him in such a way that he forgets that he is an enemy. Welcome him like a guest. And even if you are taking advantage of, no problem. History shows India has been so many times plundered. Literally, tens and hundreds of times India has been plundered. But never has there been any shortage or people have ever suffered in this land of India. Till that time, they lost this culture. Since then, we have always been begging the WHO, the World Bank. They have a shortage. Prabhupada says, this honesty on the part of a devotee is very important. It is not just that only one quarter of the devotees, somebody who is in one factor of life, one aspect of life, as in a renounced order, has to practice simplicity. Everyone has to practice this quality of simplicity with the idea that one should be honest and straightforward. Sridhar Swami says that this straightforwardness sometimes can be used in a way to hurt people. And especially as devotees, as living entities or as human beings who come to Krishna consciousness for the first time, all of us experience this. I remember the first time I was introduced to Krishna consciousness, within a few days I went home. This is wrong. My parents, for 18 years they were my parents, for 18 years. They're still my parents, but let me tell you what happened. You're not my parents. I'm not this body. I'm being straightforward. I'm being honest. I'm living entity. You're living entities. And if you don't take up Krishna consciousness, you'll go to hell. Now this is Arjavam, isn't it? This is simplicity at its very best. Rishida Swami says, another understanding of simplicity is swachhata or clarity or transparency. It means that one should speak the truth in such a way that others are not offended or hurt. It is not necessary to speak the truth and hurt others. Specifically when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, he wanted to send his disciples to the Western world to preach, he explained this principle to them. He said, this is the principle of Prabodhananda Saraswati Maharaj. These Westerners do not know anything about Krishna consciousness. What you should do? But they have many aspects within their lives which are good. So you should go to them and tell them, my dear sir, you are so nice, your dress is nice, you are so educated, you are so outgoing. And after saying all that, you can say, but this is my simple prayer. You should touch their feet and say, this is my simple prayer. Please give up your nonsense and take up Krishna consciousness with a nice mind. Not the pasted smile, but genuinely touch their feet and say, please give up your nonsense. And in this way, you can be simple, you can be honest, and the person in front of you will not be hurt. The next definition of simplicity is, as we said, in Vrindavan, it is a very simple village. And Vrindavan is so simple. In Vrindavan, when there is a festival, The festivals are celebrated with butter, curd, milk, and when they have to use it, it is not like we when we have festivals surrounding Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, do you see to what endeavors people go? They have to call in the DJs, they have to book so many sticks for playing that game and dance. Right? And then they have to have those. But in Vrindavan it's so simple. I have butter, you have butter, let's throw it on each other. And suddenly if somebody has less butter, somebody has more butter, butter is finished, they say, oh, look, no problem, I still have curd. So then they would use curd. And when curd would get over, they would use milk. And obviously, a person who is a Tarkavadi who wants to debate will say, what of that? Can you imagine butter, curd, milk? It must be just rivers flowing there of butter, curd and milk. Isn't it? It's inexhaustible. But this is the opulence of Vrindavan. Just because Vrindavan is simple. They have this, they use it to celebrate their festivals. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says the simple life. He makes this, the simplicity of Saralta is a very essential quality of a devotee, especially of a Vaishnava. Whereas duplicity or cunning behavior is a great offense against the principles of devotional service. So herein, he brings about another definition of simplicity. As Prabhupada says, simplicity means without duplicity. What is duplicity? Cunningness. What is cunningness? We all know. Isn't it? Let me tell you a joke about cunningness. I was just explaining this to someone. How a person can be cunning? A person was sitting in a bar, and there was another person sitting next to him. This joke is quite fresh in my mind because last week I narrated to someone in a different context, but still, it can show how cunning people are. So he sat next to him and said, I challenge you. I can drink this pint of whatever drink, this glass of drink, faster than you can. $10. It's a challenge, alright. He challenged him. The other person drank it faster than him, so he shelled out $10. He gave him $10. Yes, this is, I lost. Then they ordered something to eat. He said, I can eat this faster than you can. And if you beat me, I'll give you $10. If I beat you, $10. It's a bet. He took on the bet. He ate faster, so he had to give him another $10. Then he said, these are all simple challenges. Let me challenge you something that is, these are something external, eating, drinking, something that will really challenge your character, something that will challenge your ego, whether you can live up to it. Let's see whether if this challenge your ego, you can take up this challenge. He said, all right. So he said, right now, I'm going to urinate on you. Sorry, but I'm going to do this. I'm going to pass water on you. The challenge is, you should last throughout the entire incident. If you can do that, I'll give you $20. If you can't, you should give me $20. So this was a challenge. More than $1, he wanted to show that I can take up this challenge. Instruct to the challenge. So this person had given him $40. He said, alright, now I'm clean. No more challenge. I'm leaving. So he left his table, went to one corner of the room where two people were there, he sat down with them and took $100 from each of them. So right before this person went to sit at the bar with this second person to whom he had given $40, he had challenges too. I'm going to urinate in his face. And he'll laugh throughout the whole incident. If you don't believe this, bet $100 each. Now this happens in the stock market, doesn't it? This happens in the gambling arena, doesn't it? This is cunningness. This is duplicity. This happens in dealings amongst all living entities. Sometimes it is a requirement, but many times the requirement becomes a habit. Habits are hard to die. And then one cannot be simple. So simplicity means without duplicity. Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, as one advances, now he gives another aspect to this duplicity, this idea of duplicity. He says, as one advances in Krishna consciousness, gradually one must become disgusted with material attachment and become more and more attached to the Lord. And if this doesn't happen, if it happens to the contrary. There was one sannyasi who came to a temple where there were some problems. So he said, I'm here, I'm the savior, don't worry, impeccable character. This was actually a pastor in some Christian Christian. And then he said, he gave wonderful, inspiring discourses, inspired his whole congregation. They became very active. And especially this life was full of so many principles that he practiced. And then one day, there was a day when they had to meditate and fast. And he gave a very wonderful, inspiring talk. Tomorrow is the day we have to be prepared. And everyone was fired up. And they were all fasting. And then somebody had to discuss something, so they were all fasting in the temple hall or the church or whatever, wherever their congregation was, the hall there. Somebody had to discuss something with this pastor, so he left that congregation and he went to visit him. And when he went to visit him, he found that there was a whole tray of cakes and glasses of lemonade going to his room. So he asked, what is this? He said, this is for the pastor. So he went and asked him, he said, you can see that I've already practiced all of this in my life. I want all of you to come to my position. And then you can also take this plate. You can also partake of it. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is trying to make this point. He's saying that as one advances in Krishna consciousness, one must be disgusted. Bhavati mukha vikar shushru nishthi vanamcha, as Jamunacharya says. Whenever I think of taking something extra from a sense gratification, aspire for something which is not required, I simply want it from a sense gratification, my lips curl up in distress and I spit at the thought. So as one advances in Krishna consciousness, this quality, this desire, should one should hanker to have this natural disgust towards unnecessary material ingredients. We are saying unnecessary. And on the other hand, what you develop is more desire to worship Krishna, to serve Krishna. And Bhaktisiddhanta says, in a nice way, says that if one is not detached from material activities but still proclaims himself advanced in devotional service, he is cheating. No one is happy to see such a behavior. So from Prabhupada's lecture, I try to have a five-step progression of how one goes towards a duplicitous nature. The first is, if one wants to lead a very simple life of simple living, high thinking, then Prabhupada says, don't encourage artificial necessities of life. First thing he says, don't encourage that. You see, the first time the Gauranga Prabhu was saying, the devotees in Vrindavan, initially, they're not encouraging themselves. No, we don't eat this. We don't eat this. Right? And then obviously, we have the principle of purifying everything by chanting some special mantra. Apavitra, pavitra, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. Everything can be purified in Krishna's service. So, actually, this happened in Germany. Devotees were actually in the early days, maybe in the late 60s, early 70s, they all gone to a movie. And it was not Jai Jagannath or some movie for which they were given some premiere ticket. Those who know that, they are laughing at the joke. So somebody gave the devotees some premiere ticket to some movie called Jai Jagannath. Said, I want your approval for this. So there were not some premier tickets given to them for watching this movie. They had gone to this movie. And there had gone 6-7 of them actually, a dozen of them maybe. So somebody asked them, this is not proper, one is not supposed to watch movies. They said, no, we went in association. Association of devotees can protect you from all problems. Isn't that what we have heard? So they were very simple, isn't it? To practice this of simplicity. So yeah, it happens in devotional service. The nature of this material world is there's a very strong quotient on the material side. A strong attractive force there that definitely will attract the attention of every living entity. The nature of this material world she has somehow got some quality, and you have to give her a second look. And then after a few seconds, Krishna consciousness dawns. No, samsara dharma. This material world is for fire. Before that, it is like cooling refrigerator. For a few seconds, you know, wow. Billboard, fresh billboard. Oh, this material nature is so amazing. Somehow she has got that magnetic force within her. The North Pole and we are the South Pole. It is there ingrained within us. The South Pole is there and the attraction is, it's so powerful. You know, we just get oriented towards her. Like that. Yeah, it happens in devotional service. The first step Prabhupada says this, or at least from his various lectures, this is what, how I have developed this, is not to encourage. Because in the Ramayana, when Hanumanji jumped, he decided to jump from the Mahendra Parvat to Trikut Parvat across the 100 yojanas. Then he was amazed. How can this person do this? Because the very material inertia that is there does not make a living entity, even a devotee, take up something new, something encouraging, something which is an adventure in Krishna's service. That inertia, that inertia of material energy stops you from doing it. Our cocoon is there. You know, 16 rounds, now we take 19 cocoon. You know, we are in a space shuttle which have been put into space. Hopefully we are hoping that it will have enough trajectory to go into Golok Vrindavan. But something more is required. Now you may wonder, what is more required? That is the hankering or the desire to increase our devotional service to Krishna. That is the intention ingrained that propels one within this trajectory to be on the path. Otherwise one can be deviated. And what is the deviating force? The North Pole of material nature. She is always there behind you, pulling, dragging us down. So not to encourage artificial necessities of life. It's not required. Don't. First time Prabhupada saw the telex machine in a New York temple, I guess, somewhere. They showed, Prabhupada, this is a telex machine. Now we can send message immediately. Prabhupada said, this will simply increase prajalpa. And now with telex, we have internet. We have Google Talk. I don't know what else we have. Right? And do you know how much time devotees spend on it? Even I don't know. I'm afraid to calculate it. But not to encourage the artificial necessities of life. One devotee was right here in this room. Some years back he was telling me, decades he's been a devotee. He was saying, one day I was sitting in my house chanting my rounds and there was this match between India and Pakistan and oh my God, it was really, the frenzy was picking up and my neighbor the next door had this on full volume. And he said, what to do? That is the last remaining trait there. Sachin Tendulkar, I don't know who was there, somebody was chanting. And he expressed this. This is simplicity of a devotee. This is not wrong. This is where the devotee actually, this shows the quality of a devotee that is hankering for it. All the material nature is doing its best to pull him back. That tug of war is going on. But Krishna is the way he pulls through. Don't worry. As long as we are on the other side of the rope, he'll pull down the Arjuna trees of material nature. Just by a slight pull. That is all. So anyway, he said, ultimately, I could not tolerate. I had to go in. In 20 years. And after that, I did not gain much. The match was over. Hundreds of matches after then came and went. But then I realized, you know, the power of nature. So, one has to specially not encourage those seeds of desires that want us to want more and more artificial material needs. Sometime back, somebody told me about one person called as Arnold Schwarzenegger. Have you heard of his name? How many have? That's great. Those who haven't, please hear from them. He is now the governor of California. He was a film star. Before that, he was 7 times, I guess, a Mr. Universe of the world. I mean, Krishna can live more than without muscle power. So for sure that. But this person has really bulging muscles. He cigars 10 in a case. Cigars are mahacigarettes. He has special Havana cigars. Special Havana Cuban cigars. Each cigar, I'm not saying a pack of 10, each cigar costs 40 grand. 1 grand means $1,000. Each cigar costs 40 grand. And he does not smoke anything but those cigars. In a day, he goes through a pack easily, either himself or distributes it to others. He has his own personal pedicurist. One day it happened that he had to go for some checkup into hospital. He was admitted for a couple of hours. His pedicurist did not come. He specially went, just like Narad Muni deviated twice, once in Bhagavata and once in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He left the general path. Narad Muni, it is described that Nalkuvera and Manigiri was bathing in Ganga, Mandakini. He deviated, he left the general path and went towards that path. And similarly, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Mrigari was there, so he left the path to give mercy to them. So Arnold Schwarzenegger left his regular path, went to a shop, banged on a door, "Where were you? Why didn't you come into it?" Every day she comes and pedicures him. She cleans up his nails, legs. Personal pedicures. He had a tank specially shipped in from, I think he's from Austria originally. From Austria to America. 1972 or 71, when Austria was in a war. He was in that tank. He had it specially shipped. Millions of dollars. And still he is not satisfied. He wants to. He gives him charity, obviously. He does that. That's a good part of him. Gives millions of dollars maybe in charity every year. But he likes the first of anything, the first of the armored cars that was meant for civilians he had, the first of the best of suits he wanted that, the best of shoes. He has specially a person who's the best shoemaker. And he still has money and he doesn't know what to do with it. So much royalty comes from his movies, from his previous engagements. So this is how material nature encourages you. You have something, say, why not this? Why not that? 2-bedroom flat? Why not 3? One for the children in the future? Then you want a 4th one. That would be a study in the future. Yeah. Personally, for my own life, I know that. I know some of my relatives, very close. Paying just because they get a promotion, they want a new flat, a new car. They just had some raise, $1,000, or 1,000 rupees, $1,000 actually. They want a new car, a new house. So, Prabhupada says, so this is the first step, that one must be very careful not to encourage. So how does one not encourage this? Is it possible? Just tell me, is it possible? You walk down the street, you see a new hotel and you wonder, will this be available in our Govindas? Maybe I should tell them a new recipe. Now let us make it bona fide. Let it be prasad. Isn't it? As Brahmachari, you go to another temple, you see a new dress and say, maybe that color would be nice. This new style of kurta, maybe this would be better for us. In fact, this is a secret from the ashram. Our notebooks, when you find someone having a special notebook to write down notes, we want to know where it comes from and we want just that notebook. Although our previous ones are still empty. And they will remain empty for eternity. Is it a big secret? Anyways, just to balance off. So the second thing, how does one not encourage this force, this vigor for wanting more necessities in life? Prabhupada says, whatever is absolutely necessary, that is what a Brahmana will accept, not more than that. One needs this quality. Only what is absolutely necessary, that is what one should accept, not more than that. Shri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the example of that Mr. Vishnu Das or someone like that, I don't remember the name. He says his wife wanted puff rice, so he went to the market to buy puff rice. He was carrying puff rice in a small paper carton package. And if you've been to Bengal, the tradition is Bengal is in here, somehow the other that tradition is not there. But if you go to Bengal and since Bhaktisiddhanta, they give the stories from which are traditionally very Bengali. If they give you this puff rice, this muri, they fill it to the top. They literally fill up that. They will give you, even if you have to take 10 grams, they'll give you a packet so small. And they'll fill it to the top. If you want 20 grams, they'll give you packets bigger than that. They have different sizes of packets. But they'll fill it to the top. And then it becomes a matter of properly balancing it the time you come to wherever you want to go. The stuff price is very light. So this Mr. Vishnu Das was going along the way, suddenly a wind came, blew away the puff rice, and what did he do? He immediately offered it to Krishna. Yeah? Sri Vishnave Swaha. So this is not what is the understanding is, I'll accept only whatever is necessary. Although it appears that this Brahmana is only, it was lost. So he doesn't care, he is so much satisfied with whatever is necessary. But why did he go initially to the market? What is the initial purpose? So unless and until one has this quality of, or has this feeling, this need, that I will accept only it is what is necessary, one will follow the step one, go to the market to buy the first rice. So the second step is, what is absolutely necessary, that is what one has to accept. How does one do that? How can one accept only whatever is necessary? How is that possible? Envy, neighbor's envy, owner's pride. And that I don't have that from there long back. How does one do that? Especially with today's market of buy one, take three free. How does one take only what is necessary? Then I'm getting three free. One toothbrush, toothpaste and a soap. Now all I need is a soap case. Obviously I have to buy that. In today's environment, how does one cultivate this quality that I will accept only what is necessary? So the third thing, Prabhupada says is, Arjivama simplicity means life should be very simple. They should not try to imitate others. If we give up the desire to imitate someone else, then automatically one will be satisfied or will try to accept only what is necessary. Why does one want things? They have something better. They have one TV, we want two. You know that story is given of one devotee of Lord Shiva. He said, please give me some blessing. Whatever I want, give me. Lord Shiva said, yes, whatever you have, you'll get. But your neighbor will get twice as much more. So he wanted a car, neighbor got two. He wanted two bedroom flat, neighbor got four bedroom flat. And obviously, you can take it to the humorous side also. So ultimately, he got very much frustrated. What did he do? Just to take out his frustration? He pierced one of his eyes. Became blind in one eye. What happened to the neighbor? He got two blind eyes. So it's a lose-lose venture. This venture of trying to compete with someone, trying to imitate. So Prabhupada specifically says, this is the quality of a Brahmana, Vaishnava. They do not imitate the other orders. One should not try to imitate them. Then they can live very simply. How does one not imitate? How is it possible? You know, every day you travel by local train 7:25, full of rush. Your neighbor travels at local train 7:50, slightly empty. What do? You don't want to imitate them. It gives you some comfort, some luxury. Right? If that's a simple thing, you want to follow him, then it will be, see, I followed him, Then there are other things that the person does. Let me imitate that. Let me imitate that. How does one free oneself from this desire to imitate? That is the fourth thing. Prabhupada says, simplicity means that if I can live this way, why should I acquire so many things for artificial life? It means proper introspection. Just see, can I live this way? If I can live this way, why imitate so many years? Can I not survive in so much? Isn't this sufficient for me? So if we can properly introspect what we need, what we require, then we feel, oh, if this is all I need, why do I have to go for imitating somebody else, trying to seek what others have? And once you don't imitate that, obviously, only accept only what is necessary. Even if it is given in charity, only accept only what is necessary. And once one does that, one will be free from this vigor, this force that encourages accumulation of artificial things in our lives. And to conclude it, Prabhupada says, the rogues cannot be simple. Why? What is their nature? They are always intriguing, making plans, plotting. This is roguism. Their brain is always functioning, making plans, plotting. And therefore, devotee's life is very simple. No plotting, no mechanism. How is that possible? It is very simple. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitrita Kauri Yoga. Prabhupada said, my spiritual master told me to print books, I am printing books. I mean, there are many things I can do. But he told me to print books, I am doing that. What can I do? Very simple. Prabhupada, see, simplicity. No need for complication or no need for trying to find out with our complex brain machinery what could be the answers. Somebody asked, recently I was reading Prabhupada's lectures, his conversations. Somebody asked Prabhupada, why is sky blue? Prabhupada said, Krishna is blue, so sky is blue. He says, Krishna says in the Gita, Brahmano hi pratishtham. What is Brahman? What is this effulgence? What is this light? Simply it is the bodily effulgence. If Krishna is blue, his bodily effulgence will be blue. What is the sky? It is the effulgence of Krishna. So it is blue. Simple. No need to think that a stratosphere is like that, and another sphere is like that, and there is so much water here and so much water there. Those could be the secondary causes. Krishna arranges that. But the original cause is he is blue, his body is blue. So another place somebody said, I think I am God. Prabhupada said, you think you are God, Krishna thinks he is God, who should I believe? Krishna or you? Thank you. Right, so how does, as Prabhupada says, this intriguing is plotting. But a devotee is very simple. Simply follow the order of the spiritual master, it becomes very simple. He says do this, you do this, he says don't do it. And my spiritual master told me I am a fool, simply chant Hare Krishna, that is what I am doing, that is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said. And Prabhupada wrote a very instructive letter in 1952 to Pandit Nehru. He says, in the old days, life was not so much conditional and encumbered. See, Prabhupada uses the word encumbered, and towards the end of the lecture, which will happen in some time, this word I am going to use again, encumbered. Encumbered means something which is very irritating and you are forced, you are caught up in it. It is suffocating you. Something abstract actually, not necessarily physical. But it is there, maybe some emotions, maybe something like that. So in the old days, life was not so much conditional and encumbered. The symptoms, problems were roti, kapra, makan, clothing, bread and shelter, which was solved by the simple process of agriculture which gave clothing, shelter and bread. There is no need of industries, there is no need of commercialization, all of this. And then he said, the idea of living in big palatial buildings at the cost of sacrificing the boon of humanity was not known. Prabhupada is very, this statement is very interesting. He says, the idea of sacrificing the boon of humanity. You see, human life has got a boon. We know that We know that. What is our boon? Our boon is to enjoy over the animals and the rats and the cockroaches, right? Better than them. That is the boon that we have. You see some of the ads now, you can walk better than a dog, you can run faster than a deer, a panther, fly better than albatross or something like that. I mean, who are we comparing ourselves with? That is the boon that we have. Isn't it? So they'll show chicken hatching a stage and you say, a bank hatches your investment better than the state, at a faster rate. Is that the boon that we have? That is the boon of humanity? And that is why we want this tower here, to live in this big tower, spiritual building, giving us the boon of humanity? I mean, Brahman explains Maharaj Janak has a 7-story palace. Sometime back I was going by a parade and they have this big hotel there, Sheraton, ITC, Maratha, ITC hotel. And if you see that, if you see the external, you can see the different floors. Externally, you can see that there it is also about 6 floors. Inside, there are sub floors in between, but externally, there's Janak Maharaj's palace like that. And still, he came out to do a huge sacrifice on the banks of the Sarju. And therein, after the sacrifice was done, he told the Brahmanas, my palace, my life, my family, my wealth, my kingdom, I offer everything in charity to you. It was not a check that would bounce back. He gave a check and that would bounce. The next day you go to encash a check. Sorry, we are deducting 50 rupees from your account and 100 rupees from the other account. The check has bounced. Actually offer it. And then what did the Brahmanas do? They said, we accept your offering. Very nice. Is this simplicity? Yeah, it is. They said, we accept your offering, we accept everything that you've given to us, and now we give it back to you. You are the caretaker of our property. You manage it. We are going back to our ashram. Right? So then Prabhupada says, even the famous Chanakya Pandit, who was the Prime Minister of India during the reign of Chandragupta, used to live in a cottage and draw no salary from the state. And please note this. Simple habits such as this did not deteriorate his high intelligence and dignity. As such, he compiled useful literatures which are still read by millions for social and political guidance. Generally it is thought that if you are simple, people will cheat you, they will take you things, you are a loser. You are a loser in this world. Prabhupada says, if such category, such class of people exist, like Chanakya Pandit, who would not draw salary. Wang Sang, different ways they call his name, when he went to visit the Maurya dynasty, they asked him, who is the brains behind this? Who is the think tank? Right? I can understand that this is a CEO, Chandragupta Maurya is CEO, but still, there is a person who is a think tank behind this. Who is that? They said, he lives outside in the forest. So what? Someone who is the boss of the CEO lives outside in the forest? He goes and finds a small cottage. And within the cottage he finds this man with a shaven head sitting on the mud floor on a small table like this with a small lamp, slightly big lamp, writing something. He welcomes him and says, please sit for some time. He finishes off and he closes it, puts off that lamp, takes off another smaller lamp and lights it and says, when you came, it was the time of the affairs of the state. Now, office is closed, 5 o'clock. Right? Now, this is my time, I can give it to you. What about these lamps? Are you like a scientist? Newton? You're a cat. Who had a kitten? So every time the cat would come and scratch on the door, he had to open the door. So he got a brainwave. Obviously he was an intelligent person. He discovered the law of gravity, isn't it? Newton's third law of motion also. Mathematical equation. Very intelligent person. So what he did? He cut out a small slot with a snapping doorways. So that the door would remain closed also. At the same time when the cat had to come, it would just push against the flap, come inside. But then the cat had a kitten. So what to do? A small child. So Newton, beside that doorway, made another small doorway. One for the cat and one for the kitten. Obviously, the kitten could have come behind the cat, as it generally does with the same doorways. So, you know, something like that, are all intelligent people sometimes, you know, off? Or Chanakya Pandit off for the time, you know? One lamp was burning, he closes that, takes out of the lamp and lights it. So he asked him, what is this? He said, that was given, this is given to me as a means to carry out the state affairs, and this is given to me for my sustenance, this smaller lamp. Since now you are going to talk with me and this has nothing to do with state affairs, therefore I cannot use state property. What has been offered to me for my maintenance and sustenance, I have to use that. What does Prabhupada say? But he says, simple habits did not deteriorate his high intelligence. Simplicity does not mean that you become duh. like zombie. Very highly intelligent people can be very simple, and they can bring out such wonderful literatures, such products that will be useful for society. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada concludes this by saying, he describes the different types of faith. He says three classes of people who have faith. Those with less faith, for the time they need that faith, they'll come to Krishna once they are satisfied. Right? The first time I got an idea of Krishna consciousness, the first time I felt a desire actually that I should actually offer something to Krishna was on a day where I decided that today I should fast. So I went to the local ISKCON temple, and and this was the day I decided I'll go early morning, first time in my life, before sunrise. So early morning before sunrise I went to the temple, the local ISKCON temple. I took a dozen of bananas and I went and I offered it to the pujari. And obviously it was, I did not know there was shringar time and things like that. So he was doing shringar dressing. So I pulled the curtain and he came out, the pujari came out, offering the bananas. And I gave him. 5 minutes passed, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I mean, any other temple you go to, whatever you offer, something comes back. Where is this person? I put on the curtain again. He came out and said, where are my bananas? He said, I'm waiting to offer it. After dressing, I said, do you know I'm fasting since yesterday, and the only thing I'm going to do for Krishna is I'll give these bananas only. So give it to me immediately. Right? So this is the initial faith. The fasting I was doing for something else. I was a student then, so certain pressing matters were there. I had a student. But who was going to part with the bananas? First time I was fasted, early morning I woke up, I went to the temple, and this temple is very interesting, it doesn't give back. So I said, give my bananas back. He gave the bananas back. But that initial thing must have paid off some dividends. Anyways. So this is initial Komal Shraddha. But there is Madhyam Shraddha. Madhyam Shraddha means, you read the scriptures, you are not able to quote them sufficiently, you are not able to defend yourself by quoting the scriptures, but your faith is strong. Your faith is strong. Right? And strong Shraddha is, you are able to defend yourself by scriptures, and your faith is very strong. You can never be deviated from the path of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says, the second class of devotees, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, by association and simplicity can progress. By association and simplicity can progress. So here I am going to conclude by just by explaining Krishna's simplicity and something called as childlike simplicity. Prabhupada says, generally simplicity is equated with childlike innocence. And he says, just like Prahlad. He says, Prahlad was so, he was a child. And a child does not know, he is not sophisticated, he is not doing anything for prestige, fame, out of anger or something. Therefore, when Hiranyakashipu chastised him, Prahlad would feel nothing. He was just a child. He said, my father is chastising me, so what? This is simplicity. So Prabhupada says that is childlike simplicity. And he says, actually what Prahlad was thinking is, my father is telling this people, go take Prahlad. See that he is properly punished. Prahlad, you are a kalanka. You are a big blotch on the family's name. You are like a thorn tree in a forest of sandalwood trees. All that. And so Prahlad was thinking, my father is joking. Now how can my father be angry with me? He is simply joking. And then he says, this simplicity was what was used by Lord Brahma. When Hiranyakashipu was killed and all the Rakshasas killed and Lord Narasimhadeva was very angry, Brahma said, hey Prahlad, see, Narasimhadeva is angry because of your father, man. Or boy, whatever. So, it is not our duty to tell him to please be quiet. It is your duty. You go. And Prahlad said, oh yeah, really? He is my father, no? And he only got angry, no? I should only go and tell him, please Narasimhadev, please don't be angry. Now my father is killed now, so it's alright. And Prabhupada says, this is childlike simplicity. In the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada says, Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and everyone like them who have parental affection towards Krishna, the Uddipan, for that which instigates, which increases their parental love for Krishna is, one of the things is his simplicity. Krishna's simplicity. And there's a pastime in Vrindavan. Once Mother Yashoda was sitting with Krishna and she was telling Krishna, long time ago, Lord Narayan manifested as a Vamanadev. And do you know what he did? So tall. With one step he covered the upper planets. With the next step he covered the lower planets. And Krishna said, oh, really? And Mother Yashoda was really getting into the mood, like Krishna is also reciprocating. And then she said, and then he put his third foot, you know, where? Krishna said, well, his head. I am only Vamandev. Mother Yashoda said, oh, so you are Vamandev? She said, yeah, I am Vamandev. And then she said, and then you know, Krishna came and Lord Narayan came as Ram. And then he was banished to the forest. So much trouble. And you know, Krishna said, really? Were there lions and tigers in the forest? Many. But Lord Ram was not afraid because he's Lord. And then you know what happened? Yes. He told Lakshman, Lakshman, go and collect firewood. Mother Yashoda said, how do you know? Because I was Lord Ram. I am Lord Ram. Mother Yashoda said, so, you are Vamandev, you are Lord Ram, next me you will be telling you are who? Suddenly, it is explained in Vrindavan, suddenly a cat mewed from behind. Meow! Not like that. Something little more ferocious, I guess. She purred, maybe. And Krishna immediately jumped into his mother's lap and said, please, Ma, please protect me. The mother said, what happened to Vamandev? What happened to Ram? Krishna said, being Ram and Vamandev is alright, but this cat is another matter. So this is Krishna's simplicity which increases their affection towards Krishna. This is simplicity in Vrindavan. And finally, and this is the conclusion actually. In the Bhagavata Vita said, when Nanda Baba came back after Putna was killed, Nanda Baba was thinking, what happened? Somebody came into my house, nobody asked. And she came in, and there was some problem, chaos happened, and finally there is a big demon is dead. Only God knows what happens. You know, like, you know, simple villagers, they talk like that. Nanda Maharaj is a king. And then he thought, when I was in Mathura, Vasudeva actually told me, you should go back immediately because some problems may befall Vrindavan. How did Vasudeva know? He must be a big Jyotishi. Ah, oh, he must be a big Jyotishi. Yes, really. And Prabhupada says, quoting the Acharya, says, well, somewhere one devotee asked, Viraj Maharaj asked him, so is simplicity bad? I mean, or can it create problems? And Prabhupada was given various, and one place in his lecture, he gives this example, he says, for Nanda Maharaj as a Vaishya, for him to think that I don't know what happened and be bewildered and all that, is his nature, it's alright, this is Swabhav. But for Vasudev, who is in the king's palace, who is a prince, who knows kingly ways, his Swabhav is diplomacy. And one should not imitate. The point that I want to conclude with is, it is said about Krishna that he never leaves Vrindavan, especially Shyam Sundar Krishna, the simple Krishna that we know. Outside of Vrindavan, the Swabhav could be that he may have to engage in diplomacy. But if he wants to enter Vrindavan, and even if one is the king of the cowherds, one has to be simple like Nanda Maharaj. His simplicity is necessary. And what is the simplicity? Prabhupada made it very simple. He said, you have your senses, use it in Krishna service. Whatever local products you have, offer it to Krishna. Don't go to unnecessary endeavors to gather things from outside. It's so much of problem and anxiety and fear to make arrangements, which simply makes you more diplomatic. So, that is simplicity in Krishna consciousness. Once Krishna was trying, with his covered voice, he was trying to loot butter as usual. This is Krishna's simplicity. Simplicity in Krishna consciousness. So everything in Vrindavan is very simple. Along with his friends, this is another pastime from Vrindavan. So this time the cowherd women, the gopis, they were very intelligent. So they tied butter on a raft and they attached bells to it. So that even if Krishna would pull up, the bells would ring and they would know. So then Krishna went up, they made a pyramid, Dhyandi. They made that, Krishna was at the top, and as he was going to lift up, Madhu Mangal from below said, hey Krishna, be careful, the bells will ring and it will alert everyone. So Krishna looked at the bells and said, you know who I am? You know who is your master? You should not ring. Don't make a noise. The bell said, yes sir. Yes boss. In Vrindavan, bells were the talk. So Krishna took out the butter, he lifted out the pot, the bells were very quiet, nothing happened. Then he called all his friends and he distributed the butter to them and he said, eat, since they were being offered to Krishna already, it was prasad because Krishna was offering them. And then they said, why don't you eat also? So Krishna took a handful of butter and put it in his mouth. As soon as he put it in his mouth, all the bells started ringing. Krishna said, hey, what is this? What is this? The bells were ringing. Everyone ran. And Krishna was very angry. He said, you bells, I told you not to ring. Why are you ringing? He said, we never ran. What are you ringing? He said, once you tell us that whenever you eat something, we should ring. Another time you tell us that whenever you don't want us to ring when you pull out the pot. When you do whatever you tell us, you get angry. This is not our problem. It is your problem. So this is simple life in Vrindavan. Everything is a nice reciprocation, where everything is done according to the Krishna's instructions, Krishna's desire. And then, even if you are told, chant and be happy, no problem. You can always chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And be happy by following those five steps that has been given. Not to encourage desires. How do we do that? By feeling, by being satisfied with what we have. How does that come? By not trying to imitate others. How is that possible? By introspection. What do I need? Let me have only what I need. Otherwise, rogism will come in. Thank you very much. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sai Gaura Premanande.